It's Light the Tower, your daily look around the world of sports with Hall of Fame broadcaster and voice of the Texas Longhorns, Craig Way.
Say goodnight to this one!
And Horns 24/7 insider, Jeff Howe. On your live, local, and independent home for sports talk in Austin, The Horn.
Wet, dreary, rainy, chilly. That's the way a lot of folks like their meteorological experience to be. At least after all the heavy-duty heat and humidity that we've had. But we are promised. Careful how you use that word, promised. But we are promised a very pleasant weekend, including what could be a beautiful Saturday for football. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Light the Tower here on The Horn. 104.9, 101.9 AM 1260. We're live, local, and digital on The Horn app and at hornfm.com. My name is Craig White. Glad to have you with us as we visit with you again up until the noon hour. My co-host Jeff Howe will be along shortly. The man behind the glass is our very talented, hardworking, dedicated producer, and the man who is dedicated to making Flex ATX the number one high school website in the United States of America. Yeah. If it isn't already,
gosh,
he's the purveyor of Flex ATX. That is Snoop Daniel. Jonathan, John Donaldson, J. Donaldson, the given names, but we know him as Snoop Daniel. How you doing this morning?
I just want him to sell a couple of ads on there.
I think they're probably doing some of that too, and that's a good thing. So you doing okay this morning?
Yes, doing great. It's rainy, but I'm not letting that stop my shine.
Well, that's good. you're going to be here at the studio when we start to bring folks Vandegrift tonight at 7 o'clock.
Great game
against Cedar Ridge. It's a big showdown game there. And we're going to visit with Drew Sanders, head coach of the Vipers, on a game day coming up here in a few minutes.
I already have my question. I know I'm going to ask him.
That's fine. So we're gonna visit with him about Vandegrift and Cedar Ridge, and so you have your minions out there shooting, right? Yeah, you know, the eye reporters, right?
Yes,
they'll all be out there. Mm-hmm. And then so as you get things started on that, then you're gonna sprint over to Dragon Stadium?
Yeah, I'm going to try to catch a little of Hutto in Stony Point. It's not, I mean, Vandegrift and Cedar Ridge is obviously the main event, but I think Stony and Hutto both need this to have any kind of playoff hopes, and I think one of the two may get it. Well, Vista Ridge has something to say about that too, but
sure they
very
do.
Important.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So we'll get into some of that breakdown coming up. We have our Whataburger Top 5 Road Trips of the Week. Coming up. And then, as I mentioned, Vandegrift Vipers head coach Drew Sanders joins us near the bottom of the hour, where we'll preview the Vipers matchup tonight as they play Cedar Ridge. And, of course, we'll have Inconceivable later this hour. And also, of course, Longhorn Notebooks this hour and next hour, wrapped around our weekly visit with Greg Tepper, managing editor of Dave Campbell's Texas Football Magazine. He'll be on with us as well. But, of course, the man who authors those two Longhorn Notebooks, my co-host, the pride of Northwest Williamson County, proud graduate of Florence High School.
Damn right.
And they know they've got their hands full with the number one team in the state this week in 3A Division II, the Franklin Lions. But he was a former All-District Honorable Mention offensive lineman himself at Florence High School, where he wore the purple and white of the Buffaloes, where he was known as Highway 79. You know him best for his outstanding work at Horns 24/7. That's Jeff Howe. So
it's
doing?
Work. Outstanding is your word you would put on it, but I appreciate
it.
I did
choose that.
Teaser for the notebook for this hour.
Yes.
I mentioned it yesterday. I think this game with Texas and Oklahoma State on Saturday.
Okay.
It all hinges on Spencer Sanders. That's what I'm down to. When you look, I'll get it. I'll talk a little bit. You know, when you think about the Oklahoma State defense, and I thought Dave Hunsiker gave us, that's as good of a look inside of opponent as you'll get from an opposing mm-hmm. play-by-play guy.
Mm-hmm.
Oklahoma State's really good on defense. Mm-hmm. Now, I mentioned it yesterday. They're 8th in the country in defensive SP+, 18th in total defense. They're giving up less than 5.5 a play. They haven't faced an offense near as good as Texas, though. I mean, if you look at who they played, K-State, I think, is the best offense they faced. If you look at offensive SP+, which SP+, ESPN tracks that, Bill Connolly does. Basically, it's a per-play quantification, if you will, of who did you play and how good were you against them when the game mattered on a per-play basis. K-State, I think, is 49th in the country in offensive SP+. That's by far the best offense Oklahoma State's faced this year. Texas, 8th in the country. And offensive SP plus Oklahoma, the best in the Big 12 at number 3. So I think the chess match between Sark and Jim Knowles, it's going to be some give and take there.
Mm-hmm.
One of the few things this Texas defense does well is turn you over, and we'll get into it in the notebook coming up in a little bit. That's obviously, and I don't think anybody needs a notebook from me, a breakdown of it, but you know, if you've watched Oklahoma State, paid attention to them, that's one thing that Spencer Sanders can do that I think if you're a Cowboys fan, and Mike Gundy just gives you that little pit in the bottom of your stomach thinking about the outcome in this one.
Well, and it's so different, as we know, what Gundy's done with his offense now.
Yeah.
It's so radically different.
They really are. Start looking at some of the metrics, too, Craig, and the raw numbers. They really want to be a methodical offense. Like, I just was looking and been looking at the numbers. I can't remember the last time I saw Oklahoma State middle of the road to the bottom half of the league in like red zone possessions.
Yeah.
Like they want to reserve the right to kick and play field position. They're really good on special teams, trust their defense, and they're not looking to score 40, 50 points to win like they were once upon a time.
Well, that's true. So
these are not your big brothers, Oklahoma State Cowboys.
No, they're not. So it is definitely a different look. So we'll have that breakdown as well coming up. So there's a lot to get to on the program today. And I'll tell you what, why don't we just go ahead and get it and jump in and get it started right now with our Whataburger Top 5.
Now, it's time for the Whataburger Top 5.
Okay, prepare to receive
today's edition.
Here we go.
Top 5 road trips.
Okay, as we always point out, road trips don't necessarily in a top 5 mean the length of the road trip or whether you're hopping on the old yellow dog or, you know, whether you're getting on the charter bus. We asked Drew Sanders, and we'll visit with him coming up. We asked him if they were going yellow dog or if they were going charter over to, you know, over to Kelly Reeves Athletics Complex, over to the Palace. He said yellow dog. I mean, after all, it's just a straight shot right down 620.
The program of the people, as Coach Sanders likes to say.
So they'll be doing that. So that's the number 5 on our list. And the reason why it's the number 5 is Vandegrift's trying to maintain its goal to try to win a district title. But it's handling your business. And it means handling your business against the Cedar Ridge team that's already beaten Round Rock this year.
Hey, real quick, are we pretty sure where the Division I, Division II dividing line is going to be in that district? Or is that still to be determined?
Well, Round Rock's definitely going to be Division I. And right. If Cedar Ridge gets in, they're definitely going to be Division I. Vandegrift's definitely going to be Division II.
Gotcha. Okay.
So the then battle would appear to be for the number 4 playoff spot, which would be the D2 runner-up spot. Which brings us to number 4, Hutto at Stony Point. They play tonight at Dragon Stadium. Those are two of the contenders there. Vista Ridge can be a third contender as well, and they've got to go on the road, by the way, to Westwood. Just right around the corner. It's a mile and a half from campus, but they've got to go there to play tomorrow night. But Hutto at Stony Point, those are two contenders for that 4 spot. When you say, Snoop Daniel, that might well be, if not an elimination game, darn close because of the head-to-head tiebreak situation.
I feel it is.
Yeah.
Stony Point has more urgency because Hutto does have 2 district wins.
Yeah, so that's important there. Number 3, Marble Falls at Liberty Hill. Boy, you talk about a difficult road assignment for Brian Herman's ball club, having to go on the road, and they'll stay off 1431. They'll just go up to
281 to 29.
Yeah. Yeah.
Made that drive many a time.
Yep. Just go up to Burn and hang a right and go down 29. They'll do that tonight. Liberty Hill, of course, taking a big step toward making it back-to-back division district titles in the first two seasons as a 5A program by beating McCallum last week. And, of course, Marble Falls has already lost to McCallum, so they need a win to keep their district title hopes alive. That's number three on the list. Number two on the list is Anderson at Georgetown. Now, if Anderson is going to stay in the thick of the fight, they've got to come up with a win. We've been talking about that, and they have to come up with a win on the road. Georgetown, you know, looks like it's getting its sea legs back together. It's a crucial game over at Georgetown ISD Athletic
Complex.
Yeah,
for the Eagles, because their losses have all been by 4 points or less, like they'll sweat a little less if it comes down to a tiebreaker.
Yeah, that's true. Meanwhile, of course, for the Trojans,
they've got to win.
It's that important. So that's what we mean when we talk about the importance of dealing with the road trip and the importance of a crucial game late in the season, and that's what you get to there. And our number one road trip of the week, and this is a big time challenge. It's in 12-2A, Division I. Thrall at Hearn. Thrall 4-2, Hearn 4-3, Thrall 1-1 in the district, Hearn 2-1 in the district, Holland's 2-1 in district, and Thorndale's a perfect 3-0. So this is pretty much an elimination game for a district title to stay in contention for a district title. The winner still has a shot.
I've been to all those towns many times, Craig.
You also been to Rosebud Live?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, when Texas OU, when the traffic cluster, you know what, was around Temple,
mm-hmm.
I had a little workaround, ended up going through Rosebud.
Sure. And you've been through what David McWilliams used to refer to as the Bruceville Eddy Triangle?
Many, many times, indeed.
The Thorndale, by the way, is playing Bruceville Eddy. That could be rather ugly, that game's at home there, because Thorndale, the Dogs are on a roll right now. But that's a huge game, Hearn Eagles hosting those purple and white Thrall Tigers.
That is Thrall headed to the town that Walmart killed twice.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. It did do that.
I always remember her in the town that Walmart killed twice.
There it is, your Whataburger top.
Throw it in the Google machine, kids. You'll thank me later.
Whataburger top five road trips of the week. All right, I'll tell you what, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to visit with Drew Sanders, head coach of the Vandegrift Vipers. We'll have our Longhorn notebook. Don't forget, also coming up later this hour, Inconceivable. We've had another coffee incident. We'll get to that and more when we continue with Light the Tower on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9 AM 1260. We're live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.
Just like children sleeping, we could dream this night away.
Yeah, it is kind of the harvest moon thing. If you get the moon, because it's been rainy and dreary and could have some more, but we know that there's football at hand. With that, time to go to Vaquero's Cafe and Cantina Hotline for our weekly conversation with the head coach of the Vandegrift Vipers on a game day. Kind enough to join us in our conversation with Coach Drew Sanders, brought to you by Cedar Park Overhead Doors. Check them out on the web at cpdoors.com. Happy game day. I appreciate you taking the time, Drew. How are you?
What's up, Craig? How are you?
Good. So here it is, game day, and this was a question we were talking to Coach Dodge about yesterday, but it's always interesting to hear from the head coaches when you have a Thursday game. And you've already had a Thursday game this year, but the routine, how it's altered, and how closely to the regular routine you like to keep it when you get into a shorter game week.
Well, yeah, you just got to squeeze a lot in, especially when it's a great opponent like we have. So it is definitely a little different, but we've played in Thursday games a ton around here, with sometimes having to play at Round Rock or back when I was in Austin ISD. So I think I've got a good system with it and trying to make sure we still get all of our stuff in. But it is definitely a push when you lose a day to get prepared for a varsity football game.
Yeah, and you've done that Thursday run up to Killeen as well.
Yeah, we have We've done that many a time. But and I honestly don't mind it. I tell you, there's nothing like a victory on Friday after you've, you know, got a Thursday win. So as long as you win, it's pretty cool.
That makes Friday a lot more enjoyable for your guys.
For sure.
I always ask you when we cross the threshold past the halfway mark of the season, how the team is holding up health-wise, because it's always you get those bumps and bruises in the second half of the season. And I know it also puts a little more onus on you and the coaching and training and medical staff to make sure, even with the smaller nagging injuries, that your guys take care of their bodies and take care of themselves at this time of year.
Oh, yeah. You know, you always, and I'm sure Cedar Ridge and everybody else in the district has those nagging things that you deal with. You know, one of my lines at the beginning of the year, first day of practice is, okay, feel how you feel right now. That's as good as you'll feel all season. So just get your mind right, because it's just it's a collision sport, and so you're just not going to feel good all the time. And some of the guys, it's like they get, you know, in a minor car accident almost every day in practice, as physical as they are with, you know, like the lineman positions and things like that. So, you know, yeah, you're going to have all that stuff, and you want to be preemptive on some of that. Like if you've got an athlete that has a history of ankle sprains, making sure they're taped and making sure that they're wearing their ankle braces, or it's making sure that you've got, you know, we have people that, you know, do a Rosti stuff on our guys that have tight hamstrings or have a history with that, you know. So it is really, you are managing it nonstop all the time if you do it right.
Coach, when you watch this Cedar Ridge Ball Club on tape, what do you see? They've been consistently one of the more consistent programs in the area the last 5, 6, 7 years. When you watch this club on tape, what do you see?
Well, I mean, I see a mirror image of us, you know. Sam does a great job. And he is, let's start at the very, like, the lower levels. He is one of the few schools on my schedule that work really hard to make sure they have a freshman A and a freshman B and a JV A and a JV B. And they always have that every single year. So he cares a lot about the development of his program. And you can see it on Friday nights. And then to their varsity team, you know, they always have one guy that is extremely explosive, and sometimes some years multiple guys. And then they play really hard. And then defensively, they always got one or two guys that when you see them on tape, you kind of say to your guys, hey, look away. Don't look at him directly in the eyes, you know, because he's that tough looking and that mean looking, you know. And so, you know, they've got some players and got a big defensive end, number 11, that's really good. And their quarterback is a great operator, throws the ball well, and have a very fast receiver, good running back, and some other good pieces too. So I mean, they're to their record, you know, not by accident. They've beaten some good teams. It's a good team.
Our weekly visit with Vandegrift Vipers head coach Drew Sanders here on Light the Tower on the Horn with Craig Wade and Jeff Howe and Snoop Daniel.
Coach, it looks like Griffin Schaefer's move to safety was genius, and I think he had a score on defense last week. Can you kind of talk about his development in his senior year?
Yeah, Griffin Schaefer is an unusual young man in a good way. You know, he is just one of those rare guys that's an elite athlete. He's a Division I lacrosse player, but he has remained coachable. And he's our captain. He's a great leader. And we pulled him in, and we had him at one position, then we moved him, then we moved him again to our boundary safety. We call it a rover. And he just said, yeah, coach, whatever you need. And so that comes from great parents and him just being a great leader. And so, and then he can do whatever he wants. He could probably play running back for us if he wanted to. But yeah, you saw what he did with the ball in his hands. He's probably going to be asking to carry the ball some.
I would imagine also that this is something I talked with Coach Sark about last night, which will be on tonight's show on Longhorn Weekly. The deal about maximizing your talent in the places where they help you the most. And while you and the coaching staff certainly can have a vision for what you see out of that, clearly it doesn't always match the vision of what the young man or the young man's parents might have for him. Does that continue to be one of the intriguing challenges as a head coach or as any kind of football coach in making sure the kid understands that what you're envisioning for him not only is best for the program, but maybe in the long haul best for him?
Yeah, you know, I think that the days of a coach just telling a kid, hey, you need to do this because I tell you to do it. I mean, I guess you could do it that way, but I just don't think it works anymore. And so you have to, as a coach, you have to adapt with the times And so for us, if we're moving a guy's position, we're going to explain it to the young man. We're going to tell him why. We're going to tell him why it's going to benefit him. And, of course, we hope that he sees the benefit to the team, too. And then we tell our guys all the time, there's nothing wrong with having your own goals and dreams and visions, you know, and hopefully it fits within the teams. And if it doesn't, then we'll kind of try to talk that through. And then it also includes, at the high school level, sometimes you need to explain that to parents. And when I was a younger head coach, I would try to avoid those conversations for multiple reasons, as you can imagine. We got into coaching to be around kids, right, and not to have to visit with parents and stuff. But I have learned, as I've done this a long time, it's sometimes a lot better just to also call the parents and say, hey, do you have any questions? This is kind of what we're thinking, and that's been a real benefit for us at Vandegrift.
I'm wondering if you started to really have that development personally as a head coach of that element of it when you were at Travis. And the reason why I say that is, if someone just texted in on the text line, said, great to hear Coach Sanders. I'm very fortunate to have played for him at Travis. He taught me so much and helped me become a good man, much loved coach.
Wow.
And it's signed T.W.
Shriver, T.W. Shriver.
Okay.
Yeah, great young man.
Well, and during that time, I mean, you've described that in the past as being a developmental time for you as a head coach. And so that brings to mind the challenges that you have in developing these young men at the time.
Yeah, you do, you know, and you never want to ever forget that as a coach of, you know, ultimately, your job, yes, it's to win games, and ultimately, I will lose my job if we don't win enough games as deemed by our bosses, whoever. You can insert me or insert Cedar Ridge coach or whoever, right? But ultimately, we can never forget that first is development of our players, and if you develop the players and you create a great program, then the winning all takes care of itself, and that includes sometimes hard conversations and sometimes preemptive conversations of parents, this is kind of what we're thinking, here's why. You know, all that stuff, and then hopefully the kids kind of see that. But ultimately, it is about developing young men, and how do you do that? You develop through relationships and making sure that they know you care and love them, and then the kids will be more prone to listen to you, right? When you talk to them about the other football stuff.
Final thing here, Drew. What's important? What turns this ball game tonight?
Special teams. Special teams are really, really important. We both have good special teams, so I think whoever makes the least mistakes on special teams is going to have the first say. And the number two is whoever can create turnovers and limit theirs. This is going to be a contested game. It's going to be a big crowd, lots of energy. And so those two things, you know, I mean, they can turn a game. And so I think those are key again tonight. And then probably final, the war up in the trenches, you know. I mean, it's going to be our O-line versus their big D-line and vice versa. See who can – we both like to run the ball. So we're going to see who can run the ball and stop the run.
All right. It's Drew Sanders, head coach of the Vandegrift Vipers, joining us our weekly conversation. Drew, I appreciate the time. Good luck to you. We'll look forward to the conversation next week.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
All right. That's Drew Sanders, head coach of the Vandegrift Vipers. Trench war, something you always liked.
I love it.
That.
Playing in the trenches, Craig, was once – aptly described to me as upper body violence.
Oh, yeah, okay.
That's what takes place on a play-to-play basis.
And the word that we hear more now about that type of upper body violence and contact these days, especially over the past several years, is the word leverage.
Leverage, yeah. Low man wins.
Yeah.
Low man wins.
Get your leverage going. All right, there's our conversation, our weekly conversation with Drew Sanders, head coach of the Vandegrift Vipers. Right now it's time for the notebook.
Jeff Howe's Longhorn Notebook.
Before we get into Spencer Sanders, I do want to direct everybody to Hornets 24/7, the insider piece, our weekly collection of team news. Notes and nuggets have been posted, and my colleague Mike Roach had an interesting piece posted yesterday. There's some recruiting stuff in there, which we'll get to tomorrow when we visit with Mike. Is Texas trending in the right direction with Evan Stewart, the five-star wide receiver prospect? A little more on Mike's trip to New Orleans to see Arch Manning. Terrence Brooks, the Little Elm corner who's committed to Ohio State and not completely done with Texas. And then Mike had an update yesterday. Jahlil Skinner, five-star tight end who just committed to Alabama, is going to be part of this massive visit weekend this weekend at Texas.
He's going to take the visit anyway.
They had already had the trip planned before the commitment. They're going to go ahead and honor their commitment to making the trip to Texas while still being committed to Alabama. A lot of commitments in there, Craig. So in that word salad. Bottom line, Jahlil Skinner still committed to Alabama, but he's going to go ahead and visit Texas this weekend, according to his father.
Okay, so you're gonna give us some breakdown on Spencer Sanders. I want you to hear something from Coach Sark about Spencer Sanders, and this is from an excerpt from tonight's Longhorn Weekly.
A little teaser.
Here. So you'll get a chance to hear this. This is part of our – we had an extended conversation, obviously, about Oklahoma State, as we always do about the opponent in the program. And I asked him for his thoughts, and he said he's really, really impressed with what he sees from Spencer Sanders.
Tough kid, really cool competitor. He kind of reminds us of a point guard in basketball that wants the ball, wants to take that last shot. He's going to run it, he's going to throw it. If it's his own read, he's probably going to pull it at a critical moment, but he's going to throw his body in there, and it's all about trying to find a way to win, and that's how he plays the game.
Yeah, so that's tonight, Longhorn Weekly with Coach Sark. That's just a portion of it. Longhorn Weekly with Coach Sark from Learfield, and it comes your way tonight at 7 o'clock on the Horn on 104.9. Of course, on 101.9 and AM 1260, you'll hear Vandegrift, Cedar Ridge. But here on the Horn on 104.9, you'll have Longhorn Weekly with Coach Sark.
And when you look at Spencer Sanders, one of the better quarterback prospects that Oklahoma State program has ever recruited. Craig, you've gotten really familiar with him during his time at Denton. Ryan came out of that program, that Ryan program, ranked number 167 overall in the 24/7 Sports composite rankings in 2018 of the nation's number 6 ranked dual threat quarterback. He's got a ton of physical ability. And he is the very definition of a high-risk, high-reward player. We that follow the Texas program, fans who watch it, us who cover it, got a really good taste of that in 2019 when Spencer Sanders and Oklahoma State came to Austin to play Texas. This will be his second trip to Texas. And there were plays he made in the second half, you know, chunk yardage throws down the field, his ability to make things happen with his legs, the off-schedule plays, design runs, the whole nine yards, make some plays that your jaw hits the floor. You're like, wow, for a quarterback to have that kind of ability is really special. But in that game, he also threw two really critical interceptions. One was a jump ball down the sideline that Montrell Estelle went and picked off. The other one, in the fourth quarter, high leverage situation, threw it right over the middle of the field. Chris Brown breaks on the ball, and that helped Texas salt that game away a little bit, even though, you know, things got out of hand late, and as they tended to do under Tom Herman, and Texas was in a one-possession game that probably wouldn't have been or shouldn't have been a one-possession game, but I digress. Last year, Craig, he might have been, you can argue, if you look at reasons why Oklahoma State lost the football game, with turnovers obviously probably chief among them, but his inability to really protect the football. Oklahoma State turned it over 4 times in that game, a 41-34 overtime win for the Longhorns in Stillwater on Halloween. Spencer Sanders was directly responsible for 3 of those. He had an interception and 2 fumbles. So Spencer Sanders, his time against Texas really kind of encapsulates who he is in terms of that high-risk, high-reward ability. 5 touchdowns accounted for, 5 turnovers accounted for, and he's got an 0-2 record as a starting quarterback in this series. So that's why I'm saying, Craig, you know, you look at the offense-defense matchup, I love that chess match between Sark and Jim Knowles. Both of these teams are really good on special teams. I think it comes down to, can Spencer Sanders take care of the ball, or does this Texas defense really kind of build on one of the very few things they do well, which is turn you over. Again, when you look at Texas, 3rd in the Big 12, they're top 30 in the country in terms of takeaways. They've got one in every game, so they can do that. But when you look at Spencer Sanders this year, you wonder, okay, how have the turnover problems changed? Has he improved that through 4 games? Now, Oklahoma State's played 5. He's only played 4. He missed the Missouri State game because of COVID-19 protocol. So he missed the Missouri State game but starred Tulsa, Boise, K-State, and Baylor. And again, it's really a tale of 2 different players. In the wins over Boise and K-State, especially like Dave Hunziker talked to us about yesterday, that Boise game was a war of attrition. Really, really tough sledding for Oklahoma State. Like Spencer Sanders in that game, that Boise game, Craig, out in Boise, 6 of 13, 87 yards passing. It's the last time you saw Oklahoma State have under 100 yards passing in a game, 15 carries for 40 yards, but he did have the game-winning touchdown. And in those 2 games, the road win over Boise and the home win over a ranked K-State team at the time, he didn't turn the football over at all. The flip side of that is his first start this year, his first game against Tulsa, he fumbled twice, lost one of them, and he threw a pick 6 right before the half to help Tulsa get back in the game. That was a 5-point win for Oak State over Tulsa. And he was probably the reason why Baylor was in their game against Oklahoma State and Stillwater. He turned it over three times, all three interceptions. But the flip side is two of those turnovers happened. Baylor got the ball in Oklahoma State territory, so they started drives in plus territory. Both those drives ended with three and outs. That shows you how good this Oklahoma State defense is. So, to me, that's why I've looked at all the numbers, crunched it. That's what it comes down to. Spencer Sanders' ability to take care of the football, or can Texas force him to give it up? And when he does make those plays where it's a 50-50 ball or he's being careless with it, can you get a strip? Can you get a hand on it? Can you get an interception and get you a turnover?
Did you get a chance to hear all of Coach Gundy's news conference this week? Did you get a chance?
I did not. No.
Okay, all right. You're in for a treat here, okay?
Okay.
Don't worry, always. Normally, Mike Gundy's news conferences are limited to questions when somebody asks him, or responses when somebody asks him, what do you make of Texas? Why do you think they turn it around? He'll give a brusque reply. I don't know. I'm not in their camp. You'll have to ask them. You know, something like that, which has nothing to do with just asking for his opinion of what he sees.
Right.
But he did offer some more elongated answers to things, including he was asked about his recruitment of Casey Thompson, because for the second consecutive week, we're talking about a head coach from the state of Oklahoma who recruited Casey Thompson and was working with the family, with Charles Thompson, CT, yeah, as he knows him. So here's part of what he discussed about the process when they were recruiting Casey Thompson.
We offered him, I think he was a junior, early his junior year maybe. I can't remember. That's been a long time ago. We offered him. We liked him from day one. He came to camp. CT and his wife came up in my office and we visited and had good conversation. And Yurcich and myself, and told him we felt like that he'd be a really good player in the Big 12 Conference and wanted him to come to Oklahoma State. And I asked CT, or Charles, I asked him if he was okay with that. He said, sure, if he wants to come to Oklahoma State, I'm good with it. And then we offered and kind of hung around, but in the end, we weren't in the picture for whatever reason.
Okay, so then there's that. And then there was the follow-up. Somebody said, well, wait a minute, weren't you recruiting Spencer Sanders at the same time you were recruiting Casey Thompson? So How did you deal with what you told each guy as you were recruiting? Listen to his response on how did you deal with what you were telling each of these guys.
Me, is you tell them the truth. That's the way you deal with it.
That's not the one. that's
throughout the year. His ability to make you tell one one thing and tell one the other.
That's it right there. Let's rewrite that. I'm going to reset it up again. So he was asking, and it should be pointed out too, Mike Gundy is a former high school quarterback in Oklahoma at the same time Charles Thompson was, and forgetting the Arkansas quarterback's name, Quinn Grovey. All right, so the three of them were all played on the same All-Star team together, and they talked about them knowing one another and all of a sudden. So we knew Charles Thompson really well.
Yeah.
So we talked about how he talked about how he was recruiting him. He said it didn't work out for whatever reason. He said, well, weren't you recruiting Spencer Sanders at the time? What did you tell each of these quarterbacks when you were recruiting them?
You tell one thing and tell one the other. I can just say we told them both the same things, but that wasn't true. So you tell him he's the best player, and you tell him he's the best player. You're the guy we want, and you're the guy we want. So we liked both of them. We felt like they were both quarterbacks that could really develop throwing the ball and then be able to run the ball, rush the ball effectively. We liked both of them. We went after both of them. Obviously, we weren't going to take both. So it was kind of first come, first serve.
How about that?
You know, it's amazing, Craig, in the muck of the Oklahoma loss and the aftermath of it. Everybody's talking about the defense and the issues on that side of the ball. But remember going into that game, you're always wondering, man, you're a first-time starting quarterback in this game. You guys don't have a good record. I mean, and Casey Thompson lost the game technically as a starter, but he's not the reason they lost the game.
Nope.
20 and 34, threw for 3-8, threw five touchdowns. And he was not – he was dead. The moment was not too big for Casey Thompson on Saturday. That is a really, really big hurdle for him to clear in his time as a starting quarterback here. You go into that game and perform the way you did, that's something you can take forward. If you're looking, and again, you're not looking for silver linings or moral victories. There are none of that in this series. But looking at something to spin forward, how do you have a really good second half and build on it? You throw five touchdown passes in that game against that team in that stadium. It's a hell of a way to get your second half started.
I asked Sark that question point blank about what did he discuss with Casey because Casey was pretty upset after the game. He was kind of emotional and stuff and things like that, obviously, and was very, very disappointed. And he said, I told him, you know, because we were talking about the positive buildup, Xavier Worthy coming over, and he says, give me a smile after the kickoff return fumble and all that sort of stuff. He said he told Casey, I hope you're proud of the way you played, because you played really well. Understand that, you know, and so it was, you know, he wanted him to understand that, that he understood that he did just about everything he could to try to help his team win.
And you know how we do it on a Thursday, Craig. That's your first hour notebook, second hour notebook. We will recap the Sark Zoom call coming up here in about a half hour.
And we'll look forward to that. Up next, Inconceivable here with Light the Tower on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260. We're live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.
Bucky and Aaron.
And it's windy with her hair all jacked up and stuff. I don't, it's not a good one. It's after hanging out with Bobby Brown for a night or something. Everything was going good. She met that dude.
Yeah, like she was in that movie with Kevin Costner. She was so gorgeous in that.
Inconceivable. Inconceivable. Inconceivable.
You keep using that word. I don't think it means what you think it means.
You know, somebody texted in and said, is it inconceivable that I blame Coach Collier for all the bad drivers in South Austin? Don't blame CC for that.
No.
That's not his fault. He said, just kidding. CB says the Air Ride Onion Creek got 8 or 9 inches of
Isn't
rain last
CB's
night.
CB's birthday? I think it's CB's
it is.
Birthday.
Yeah. It is, CB.
Happy birthday, CB.
Happy birthday to you, my friend. Hope it's going well up in the Pacific Northwest. And yeah, Onion Creek's supposed to crest today, what, 19 feet or some ridiculous amount?
I texted Bucky last night because that was when that storm rolled through Blanco.
Yeah.
The Blanco area was headed kind of northeast. And I know it was headed right for Dripping Springs. I texted Bucky and said, hey, hope everything's fine. And he texted me back early this morning and said everything was bad weather, but it ended up being okay. Right about the time I was going to bed, Craig, probably about 11:30 last night, was when it started out of my humble abode in San Marcos.
Yeah.
Turd floater, gully washer,
those frog terms, strangler.
Those terms would be appropriate for what the weather was like out of my place last
night. It was
night.
Not good. Also, wasn't good in Las Vegas, not weather-wise, but what was supposed to be a special day of the weekend became an emotional roller coaster ride for a bride whose family could not attend her wedding after Southwest Airlines canceled all those thousands of flights. So Kimberly Romano and Kyle Lavati live in Chicago along with most of her family. They flew to Las Vegas for their wedding weekend last Wednesday. No issues getting out there. There was one bridesmaid's flight canceled or delayed Friday, but it wasn't until Saturday morning, the day before the wedding, that the couple became concerned that Romano's parents wouldn't be able to make it. Avlati's friend was supposed to be on the same flight as Romano's parents from Chicago Midway, called to say the flight had been canceled, didn't know what was going on because he was still on hold with customer service. Haven't we all been there for that? He said, so I called my parents immediately, she said, and they said, the flight's been canceled. And, of course, it turns out and I was freaking out. Southwest had a number of issues caused the weekend cancellations, and so they ended up not being able to make it. So they were able to get the parents out there for Sunday morning at 6, but learned even that flight had been canceled. And so they considered postponing the wedding, but the current parents said, go ahead and get married.
You know, my colleague at Horns 24/7, Mike Roach, Mike got caught in some of those Southwest cancellations.
Really?
Trying to get back from New Orleans. He had a nice, he got the nice late morning, early afternoon flight back. And what is that from New Orleans to Love Field, Craig? About an hour? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he gets on the phone with Southwest after they cancel his flight, gets on the phone with them Saturday night and said, well, we can put you on a 6 a.m. And at that point, he's like, well, don't really have much of a choice if I want to get home, do I? So got that red eye flight out.
Glad he got out of there. Was able to get out of there. Remember the deal in the Tour de France where the woman calls the giant pileup?
She got banned for life, right?
She also goes on trial today.
Ooh.
In France, behind one of the biggest pileups in Tour de France history, appeared in court earlier today, charged with this is what she's charged with: injuring dozens of riders on the first day of the race.
Assault charges?
Well, 31-year-old French woman whose identity was withheld after she was targeted by a torrent of online abuse had already told prosecutors of being ashamed at her stupidity, is what she said. So she's kind of owning it that. She got away from journalists who were waiting at the courthouse in Western France, but the presiding judge rejected a request by her lawyer to have the trial held behind closed doors. Woman has no criminal record. She'd been attending the opening tour stage on June 26th with a goal of getting a sign noticed by the TV cameras. It read, Allez, op omi, meaning go grandpa and granny, a nod to her family's German heritage. But she stepped out too far in front of the tightly packed peloton as it sped along the narrow road toward the finish at Landerneau in western France. German rider Tony Martin was unable to avoid bumping into her, fell, forced dozens of riders to crash while others swerved into the crowd of onlookers. And video footage of the collision and ghastly scenes of medics tending stunned or grimacing victims sparked outrage among fans and race organizers. She was in hiding for 4 days. Had to go Bartman, you know, for that deal. She's charged, this is what she's charged with, endangering lives and causing unintentional injuries. She risks a fine of 15,000 euros, that's about $17,300, and a year in prison. It does seem unlikely she'll spend time behind bars. The public prosecutor noted that after arrest on June 30th, she had some personal vulnerabilities.
So they take their cycling serious over in France.
Yeah. You know,
what is that? That whole scenario sounds like a Family Guy flashback. Like, oh, it's like that time Peter caused the pile up at the Tour de France.
Right. Peter tried to hold up a sign at the Tour de France and all that. Yeah, you're right. That kind of deal. Okay. We have another hot coffee incident. This takes place at a Dunkin' in Brockton, Mass. With your cousin from Boston. With this lady, a woman.
It's the only reason why we're doing this, isn't it?
She's suing the local owner of the store and two employees. Now, here's the hook on this. She says she was burned by scalding hot coffee. Now, we know what hot coffee injuries can bring. They bring usually bring legal action, right?
Was there a top on?
Yeah.
Did you put the top on, or did they put the top on
no,
for you?
They put the top on, and they made the top. You didn't make the top, did you?
Susan, I want you to go down to Java World. Get me a cafe latte with a top. We're going to run some tests on that top.
And here's the hook on that. Angela Barbosa has filed a lawsuit. She says she was in the passenger seat of her sister's car when they pulled up to the Dunkin' drive-thru and ordered three hot coffees. She claims an employee handed her sister coffee cups that weren't placed firmly in the tray and that the drinks didn't have a top on them or weren't properly capped. They came loose. They tipped over on the Barbosa, burned her legs and her buttocks, according to the suit. Jeez. Screaming in pain, the plaintiff was forced to rip off her leggings in the parking lot, exposing herself in full view of the Dunkin' Donuts employees, according to lawsuits. Seeing this, the employees were seen pointing, laughing, and mocking the plaintiff. So,
okay, it's terrible that she got burned. I'm going to admit, if I worked at that Dunkin' Donuts, I probably would have been guilty of doing
would
this.
You? Would you have been mocking and laughing at a woman who just got serious scalding burns?
Because if I'm working at Dunkin' Donuts, I'm probably in my late teens, early 20s at that point. Given what I found humorous in life, yeah, I probably would have done it.
Spill resulted in serious burns and nerve damage as well as permanent
scars.
Damn,
how hot was this coffee?
It was too hot, apparently.
Evidently,
like Seinfeld said, it's supposed to be hot. Not that hot. Apparently, she's suing for negligence and emotional distress. The defendant's actions, this sounds like Jackie Chan, were extreme and outrageous, beyond all possible bounds of decency and utterly intolerable in a civilized community. It's outrageous, egregious, salacious. All of that stuff. Preposterous.
I told you guys the story about the time I worked at a computer support place when the manager's food got eaten on a weekend shift and the note that was left on the fridge.
Yeah.
I told you that story.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And I'll never forget this line in the note. And every time you read something like that, it reminds me of this. It said, I don't expect the culprit who pilfered my food to come forward, as anyone who would commit such an act has no honor.
It's true. Absolutely. So she's suing Dunkin' there in Brockton. Your cousin from Boston is suing because she got burned.
It's like 13 years ago, and that note is still hilarious to me.
Yeah, I could see that. And somebody's blaming the woman, the stupid woman. She was in the passenger seat.
That text came in on the Tour de France story.
Oh, okay, yeah. Well, she did say she was her own stupidity. She said that was the word she used, her own stupidity.
Tell me something I don't know.
Yeah. Viva Lance Jason says, I'm all for any story that either gets Craig to mention his cousin from Boston or to play a classic Seinfeld clip. You got them both.
Australian accent stories as well.
Good
day,
mate.
It's a pretty big player here in Conceivable.
Thad Ankum. All right. Hour number two coming up. Greg Tepper.